Welcome to Soul Busy. I'm Rach.
And I'm Carly,
your CEO
and COO
sisters. We share unfiltered convo on balancing hustle with mindfulness
while running successful businesses with soul
and the real life between it all. Welcome.
Thank you.
Are you excited to be here?
Yes, I'm excited. I'm nervous.
You're going to be great, Andrea.
I don't know.
It's unlike Maria.
I know.
Like to be nervous. I'm not nervous.
I just need...
She's already warmed up.
Let's go. Bring it on.
All right. Well, we love you.
Happy
birthday.
Who's we?
Me and me.
Collectively, her and dad love us. You've been highly requested on the podcast.
Interesting.
Highly requested.
Well, I hope I don't disappoint.
People love Mom. I don't think it's possible for
Andrea.
You to disappoint.
Maria.
Well, I think so. Like following the episode of Dad, I feel like there's a lot of questions of people asking, like, how did you feel during that time? And it's interesting because that podcast was kind of like the first time Dad ever told this story with his words, and you've actually just never had a voice in it all. But you are the other equal part. Dad sat in a jail cell struggling, but you sat in another form of a jail cell struggling too. And it's interesting that you never got to tell your story either.
I've also never heard the story. Like that was my first time hearing it as well.
I
lived the story, but I don't think I've ever heard it from Dad's perspective. I only knew about it from yours or Rachel's. And I was pretty young then. I was still in high school.
Right.
So it was like really funny to like hear it while I was 30. And like download it. So it must be even weirder for you to keep hearing it now. Well, it's like kind of in the background of your life.
It's definitely in the background of my life, but I don't forget. It's pretty intense.
And I don't want this to just be about that today. Same. Like I think that we can touch on it, but I think that you have so much more of a message. And we did a poll on Instagram and asked people like what questions they have for a mother of five children, you know, who's been through hard times, but is also just incredibly resilient in all these different ways and has a handicapped child. And, you know, you deal with a lot of shit and you do it with grace. People had questions. So I have all the questions written down. I'll kind of interject them throughout the conversation today just so we can get those questions answered because there were some good ones in there.
Okay.
But I think first and foremost, you know, we changed the podcast name to Soul Busy. Andrea Rubin is by definition the most soul busy person that I've ever met in my life. You are the origin of soul busy.
Okay.
You taught us soul busy. You taught us soul busy.
I love the word soul.
Me too.
I know you taught us that.
I love the word busy.
Well, you are like the busiest person I know, but also the most grounded person I know. I think we get that from you, right?
I definitely am grounded. I am definitely somebody that is not afraid and sort of just takes things on. Yeah, I love that.
But like you've had a series of shit in your life.
I have.
You've had a sister who died at what age? How old were you?
I was nine.
Nine and she was 12.
She was hit by a car.
Lindsay Alpert.
Yep.
Who I'm named after.
Yep.
That's fucked up.
That started it all.
Yep.
That didn't.
You had, you know, some dad moments, right? Like you had a father who wasn't always 100% present
there for you.
Definitely very unavailable.
Yep.
I had a dad.
It
was my dad. It was just
my grampy. Loved him. But like, you know, that's a factor in how you.
She's even doing it now though. She's positive and she's like, I had a dad.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm grateful.
It's just in your blood.
Yes.
Through it all.
I was born this way.
You were. Well, no, I think you were. Yeah. Born it.
Do you think that though? Because that's an interesting topic. When you went through this trauma, like you think you were born that way to deal with it? Or like, did you think that you like kind of learned as you went?
I didn't have a lot of choices.
Right.
I just felt always half full, and I still do.
What made you feel that way, though?
I just, like, my father would brush by me and walk by me, and it wasn't like I love you a lot or I'm here a lot, but he would brush by me and
that was
tousle
enough.
My hair.
That was enough for you.
And I knew he loved me.
Right.
I felt loved. They had the weirdest form of showing it.
And we, as in your mom too?
My mother was as available as she could be. She was strong and weak and also unavailable.
Yeah.
But because they weren't happy. And when you're not happy, you're not available for your children, or you're so available for your children that you can't focus on yourself.
Well, what's funny about you is you come from divorced parents, correct?
Yes, I do.
And we don't. So we don't know like the struggles you had or what you went through.
I know a lot of my friends who have divorced parents, it's a big struggle in their life. It's defined a big part of their life.
I don't think you ever let that define you though.
No, I was 20.
Yep.
So I was already an established human being and I was already out of the house and I was working and I was fine with it.
But you were working from a young age because one thing you said to me, I remember a long time ago, is like, when don't ever tell someone to be strong, or when somebody asks you, how are you so strong? Your answer, I believe you said something like, you just don't have a choice. So it's strength sometimes isn't a choice. It's just all you have.
Well, what can you change?
Right.
If you can change something, you do it. And if you can't, you have to roll with things. That's right. How I lived.
Right.
I rolled with it.
My sister, like the motto of your life.
Yes. Most of the time, life is pretty good and pretty normal. For me, I've had a lot of things come at me. And I swear having them come at me young kind of made me start thinking, well, that wasn't so horrible, because that was so horrible. When my sister died, I'm like, well, nobody died. And that is really, because when somebody dies, it's terminal and it's over. And that's a grief that you really don't even know where you're going to put it. I didn't know where the loss of my sister would take me. It took me to have children to realize what an impact that was on my life and my soul. Because then I only worried about my children dying.
Right.
Because it seemed normal. It seemed like a normal thing. This is what
thank
you're
you for
nine.
Passing that on.
No, but when you're I'm nine. Just
saying thank you for passing on those,
sorry,
those thoughts.
I definitely, my thoughts definitely kind of went to Carly a lot. And I don't even know that I was conscious of
passing. You're saying because she was a second born.
No, I just feel like Carly is just more sensitive and in tune with worrying and loss and kind of taking that on a little bit more than I wish.
From you.
Well, yes, sorry.
Not a fun fact, but a fact. We are in the Saxonville Mill building and you grew up right next door to here.
I did.
And Lindsay,
shout out to Clara Road.
Shout out.
Your sister was walking to school and
right
here next to the building. I used to be able to see the spot from my old office, and she was hit by a car by a man that was blinded by the sun on the way to school. And
my other sister witnessed that.
Witnessed the whole thing, and she passed away.
Yes.
On the way to school.
She passed away that night, and we kind of, I'll never forget that day, because my mother was like, cream of wheat or oatmeal. That was what my mother was doing. And I made my own bed. I was nine. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, my sister can tell me like what it felt like to be hit by a car. And I thought, does that hurt? I never went to death because I didn't know death. It didn't, you're nine. You don't think someone's going to die. And my parents went to the hospital and came home. We went to school, got a lot of attention, and it was kind of worrisome because so many people were paying so much attention to you. And when I got home, my parents sat us down and said my sister was hit by a car and would never be the same if she lived, and that she probably wouldn't. And that was, I'll never forget sitting on my parents' bed, and we used to do that sure sign when we were little. We used to go, sure. And that's what I remember doing to my parents. I'm like, sure. And they're like, do you want to see her? And I said no, because I had heard she had her head shaved and she was in pretty rough shape, and I didn't ever want to see that. Sometimes I regret that, but we said no, and they just said that we would probably lose her. And we did. That night at midnight, our phone rang. We were all at home. It's funny, my parents weren't at the hospital, which still fascinates me. They came home to us. I guess those were the times. And the hospital called and said she passed away. And
alone?
She was alone.
It's horrible.
But I don't know why that was. I always question that.
I did not know we were going to start talking about Lindsay.
Yeah.
Well, and here we are.
Yeah. And well, so that's kind of where it all began. And that story just sort of, that's where it started, where trauma started for me.
Yeah. You've had a series of trauma in your life.
Yeah.
It's insane.
But then you weigh them out.
Right.
Well, I think not everyone weighs them out. And I think that's where you come in as soul busy, because, or that was something that you learned early in your lifetime, because I think people either stop their life in their tracks from that moment and they never live again.
Well, they let it define them, or but they let it define them in a good way.
You lived again and even lived to deal with more trauma.
Yeah.
More trauma.
Like kind of endless.
And endless trauma. And you never.
Yet also so much beauty.
Yeah. You never let it define you. I really respect that and appreciate your vulnerability, because not everybody can go through something like that and then just be okay.
Well, it also, I think, defined us. Like in so many different ways, whether you meant for it to or not, it.
Well, I mean, I was who I am and I never changed. And you guys became part of who I was, part of who Daddy is, who's pretty strong. And I think together you have two really strong parents. Mm. And I think we really do see things. You know, it's funny. I'm very positive, but I think Daddy might be more positive.
It's so weird you said that, because this past week was Carly's wedding, obviously. And it was like the most incredible event ever. You planned the most beautiful wedding I think I've ever been to.
Beautiful.
Magnificent.
Add wedding planner to my
list. Add a beautiful bride.
So
thank you.
Incredible.
Thank you.
Yet amongst it all, we obviously all got the neurovirus. Of course.
I did not.
Almost all of us. I had probably one of the most challenging weeks that I've ever experienced in my motherhood, just in general. And it was every day it was a challenge. The girls were throwing up on me. I had to wash my hair like 75 times a day. Just wanted to be Carly's maid of honor and just be there with her. It was all I cared about that week. Yet I felt like I couldn't get to you the whole fucking week.
The good news is I don't need you, honey bear.
Well, that's rude.
No, I'm just saying, like,
you were good.
I don't look back on that
you were
and
wonderful.
Think anything.
Like, but that day was epic.
All I cared about was Lily and Sadie being fine. I don't care about.
Well, my point, though, is that I looked at Dad at one point and I slipped on positivity for a second. I was like, Jesus, this is a lot. Like, I'm tired. And he was like, you're fine. And those babies are life, and go clean up their puke.
Agreed.
And I was like, yeah, I'm totally fine. Like, I'm good.
Well,
and I was
we were at the laundromat.
You guys were at the laundromat cleaning our clothes.
The night before my wedding, I was at the laundromat with you.
Right. Yeah, 10:30 in the ghetto laundromat from hell.
I love that about our family, though. And if you really think about it, like, everyone rallied, and you were such a lovely friend during a time when the focus should have been on just you. You helped me when I was down and out, and you and Dad the night before your daughter's wedding were, you know, doing our puke laundry and helping us clean the rental car because the girls had thrown up in it everywhere. And, you know, what you got to do. You just press go.
Yeah. And I'm not saying I don't need you. I obviously do. I'm totally kidding. I'm saying
I don't need to be told that. Your life is surrounded by me. I am the pulse of your life.
What I mean more is that, like, I cared less about me in those moments and way more about your children.
Yourself.
Because were good.
Yeah.
And you're marrying the love of your life in a great time.
100%.
Things are going to trip us up. That's life.
Totally. Right.
And you're kidding yourself. The people that don't have trauma or chaos are usually the ones that don't deal well with it, because when it hits them, when my friend passed away and she was 43 and she was one of my closest friends, death was so familiar to me. It wasn't, people had told me I've never known anybody that died. And now we were in our 40s at this point. I was probably a little older, and I'm like, you're lucky, I think. Yeah. But I had already done all this. It's familiar. So then you have to just say, okay, well, how old is this person? How young is this person? It's always about, like, when my grandmother died and she was 93, I cried and I loved her. But my life went on the next day, because she had a beautiful life and she was the love of loves of my life.
You've been gifted with perspective.
I think that is something you cannot buy or learn. Mm. It's something that you have. Well, you could learn it, I suppose, with things that happen, but I've always been very half full and found love in every situation.
That's the definition of you. I want to just back up for a second. So, soul busy. You have 5 children. You have a handicapped child. You have a busy life. You take care of my kids. You have a full-time job, pretty much 2 full-time jobs. Yet, you're fully happy all the time, fully soul busy all the time. What's your definition of soul busy as a person?
My definition of soul busy would be to be full of the life that I live, being pulled in every possible direction, that I am pulled in, and then always knowing when it's time to find time for me. Mm. I am a big massage, mani, pedi, even if it's just my feet being rubbed, going to bed early because I know I'm there and I need it, going to TJ Maxx with myself and just a little coffee and bopping through that store, doing my returns, taking care of me is still a priority while I'm taking care of all of you. But taking care of my grandchildren and my children is my pleasure.
It's not work
and
to
my
you,
yeah. joy. And it's my purpose. Mm. And I'm so incredibly grateful for so many silly things. Just sheets and heat and AC and bed.
Perspective.
And healthy children and healthy grandchildren.
AC is definitely up there for me.
I have to say that when I go to bed at night and I just get in my bed, I'm like, I'm so happy I'm not in a cave or on the street, or I really mean that.
Mm, I think you've been seriously scarred in your life.
Maybe, but it got me here and I would never change.
100%. So let's start with dad being in jail, because I think that was obviously the most recent topic on the podcast. Let's start with the day you were in court. I think we all obviously told the story. We were blindsided. We didn't understand, blah, 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 blah. We all get it. Dad gets the sentence. He's guilty. What the fuck is going through your mind?
Well, I wanted to go to my knees, truthfully. I had friends with me. I guess I never really understood the impact of the situation. I never took it seriously. I never really believed it. I knew he didn't do it. So it's, to me, I'm like, this can't be real. Right. I didn't even think I needed to attend. Mm. I literally was like, do I need to go? He's like, it might be good to just have a little support. I said, okay. And when
we're canceling the court.
I'm like, we're done.
We can't commit.
Your Honor, cannot. We're at TJ
Maxx. We're so busy.
Your Honor.
When they... My brother was next to me, and he's an attorney, and he did say to me, it's a little scary right now. There's a light that's going to go on, and the jury comes back in, and then they announce what's what. So he kind of prepped me, and I was like, all right. And we all stood up, and they said he was guilty 3 times on 3 different counts, and I literally went to my knees, and the judge said that he would put me in contempt if I spoke again. Because I was just like, what? And so I was afraid to speak. And daddy turned around and looked at me and was like, what the fuck? And I'm like, I don't know. And I didn't know what that meant yet. Did that mean he was going to go away for 10 years? I knew what the charges could mean. I understood that. But I was like, how did we get here? How did they even get that answer on the findings? There's no findings. It seemed very suspicious to me and clearly unimaginable. And then we got to go home. So we went home together, and it was just so scary. We had this time where we could come and find our children, and our boys were with friends, and I knew the next day they were going to sentence him and take him away. And we went home, and we gathered everybody, and we cried through the night. And I remember I woke up in the middle of the night. I was panicked. And daddy took me outside to the deck. And it was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and the stars and the moon were still out. And he's like, look up and breathe and look out and know I'm going to be okay.
I hate that story.
And you're going to be okay.
I didn't know that.
And he's like, I promise you're going to be okay. And... now, I have no idea what I'm in for. I still don't know. And it was just this moment. We were so vulnerable, and we were so scared. Daddy, too.
That's so
he was
sad.
So vulnerable. And I had no idea what he was heading into. I knew what I was going to be in.
Right, we were all clueless.
Right. We had no idea. So that's what happened. And then the next day, they sentenced him. And they sentenced him. It was weird. The whole thing was so screwed up. The judge was like... we're going to go easy. And, you know, it's almost like made up court. And they gave him 2 years.
You're in like Plato court. That's what it felt like.
It made no sense.
None of it made sense.
The lawyer was like, don't worry about it. I'm like, I think I need to worry about it.
What do you mean, don't worry about it?
And then they took him. He was in front of me, and they took him away. And so that he was just gone. And I was just in the courtroom. He's like, we went and got coffee because I could not get it together. And I had to drive home alone. And I had some friends with me and we were just all kind of dumbfounded. And so I, in my head, I had 2 years in my head. And I'm like, 2 years with five children? And Jake, he's so physically needy. It's like, that's, it wasn't Jake. It was just his physical needs were met a lot by Jerry.
Only look at us.
And it was just more that it was overwhelming. It was just very overwhelming to be in a position that you had no idea what was going to be. And I went home. And I picked up Jesse from middle school. I will never forget this. And he got in the car, and he's so cute, and he's so little. And he was in sixth grade, and he looked at me, and he just cried. And he's like, where's Daddy? And I'm like, he's gone. And then we got Michael, and we got ice cream, and we went home. We did our homework. And I was just like, well, I don't even know what anything means. And Carly, you lived with me, so you eventually came home. You were really upset. She didn't. She did. She was in high school.
I was in high school.
And I let
Carly were home, and then you went.
She left.
I didn't go.
I no, always Carly get this timeline home. Wrong.
She yeah, was I home. Didn't go.
And
I couldn't go.
No. And then yeah, she couldn't go. But you, but it worked out. But you,
you got a good job.
But we,
you're thriving.
We didn't hear. I did not leave my house for 2 weeks. Daddy did not call for 2 weeks. He wasn't allowed to make a call. And then he finally got some woman helped him make the call. And my, I got a collect call, and I just waited. And he finally called, and he told me he had no blanket, no pillow, no food, no extras, no nothing. I'm like, well, what do I do? And he told me what I did, and I drove to the prison with my friend Nancy, and we were like, hi, we're new here. And he didn't do it, and he's like, nobody did it. And I'm like, okay, but he really didn't do it. And he's like, what do you need? I'm like, I guess I need to put money in his.
He needs tuna.
Canteen. It cost me money. And so I paid and I, you know, we went there and it was like prison. And the one of the guards was really kind and he's like, oh, we met him and he's lovely and we took care of him. And I walked him to his cell. I'm like, I'm good. I can't even imagine where this goes. And we just kind of carried on with our lives. He was okay, which made me okay.
Yeah. Isn't, were you okay?
Yes.
That's what's fucked up. You were okay.
Yes.
See, that's the thing. Everyone's like, we all were okay think, because you and Dad were okay.
Well, I think the fact that he didn't do it.
Yes.
Like, and I we knew he a didn't
million,
do it.
Carly, it's 1,000,000%.
Like, I think for me, and I don't know about you, and I know we can be similar in this way, like, I was more angry, like, at physically, people. Physically angry and pissed off and, like, sad for him. And protective over him than like pissed at anything else because I was like, I know he didn't do this and this is complete bullshit.
Well, it's absurd.
Yeah, like it's complete bullshit. And I got more angry at the people who like thought he was guilty.
Well, I right? think
like my, being in your own world.
Like
well, I think it was exhausting to feel the need to defend everywhere 100%. I went because I would exhausting. Go to the baseball fields and people were like
right.
tilting people, their head face. And they're like, why is he in jail, right. Andrea?
When like, people you know, gave me an inkling of thinking he was guilty, I would write them off. I'd be you know like, what? You just look at me.
You need to be forgiven because I'm going to tell you why.
Don't look at me again.
Okay, but in that position, when you do see somebody in get up and in a courtroom and the jury and all of it,
right.
most all of the time they are to, guilty. They right. wanted him to plea and he refused. And I said, I'd rather see you do 10 years than say you did it because you didn't. And he said agreed, and we didn't. He could have pleaded and got out in 3 months.
We don't know most of the time. We don't know who's guilty and who's not.
But that's what I'm saying.
That's what's so messed up, though. It's like how many other people went to jail innocently?
Well,
it's not right.
They say in law that they would rather send free 10 guilty people than convict an innocent one. But it was very hard to me to see how these rules apply because nothing applied to Daddy. No matter what, yeah. nothing. It made no sense.
So he was away for a year.
One whole year.
One whole year. You were at home with four children. I was obviously at school.
Mm-hmm.
And you were in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
You had I remember there was a scenario in which you had a friend who was questioning like you getting blowouts during that time.
Yep.
I don't think you were any friends with that person any longer for much longer after that, or like it affected your relationship in a negative way.
It, you know, every situation in your life affects relationships, whether it's death or good or bad or not inviting or inviting or whatever the reasons are, they define different relationships. For me, this unfortunately defined some relationships that I really valued, and some I didn't value became really good.
Right. It highlighted
for me.
Well, but on the subject of that individual, forgetting about, I'm not like saying anything negative about that person. I actually just find it an interesting topic on this podcast, because when your husband was in jail and you were taking care of your children, you were on food stamps, right?
Mm-hmm.
You prioritized getting a blowout, mm-hmm. which I can understand why most people would not understand that. And I could understand why most people might form judgments against that. I get that, right? Whatever. You prioritized yourself at a time of need in your life.
I never looked at it like that.
I don't mean that negatively. I mean it extremely positively. That to me is the definition of soul busy.
Yes.
You were the busiest and hard in the hardest time of your life, yet you knew that if you could prioritize some self-care, you could thrive. You felt pretty. If your hair bounced the right way.
I was good.
You could do things better.
I have a choice. Honestly need to say I was not living off the system. I went to work. I had a job. I took help when I needed it. My mother offered me anytime. My brother said, if you need anything, I never needed to go to them. I carried on our little business, little bits of it. I learned to live on very little. And I was okay with it, but I was not giving up my blow dry.
You didn't have to.
And I never would give up my blow dry. I'm sorry, but that's a
I love that about
a thing
you.
For me that made me feel good.
The bigger thing than you think.
And you know what? I had a big, big, fat audience. My children, I was not going to allow their lives to alter from something that went terribly wrong.
I was just
going to
say
wrong.
You didn't. I remember the prom dress you still bought me that I wanted, and you never said no, and you never
I made
stopped
it
our lives. We did get the, remember that? We did get the fake Chinese prom dress.
We tried the Chinese
one that we wanted.
Prom gum.
It was so horrible. We had to end up spending double.
I just bought her the right one.
Yeah, like we
tried.
We got the knockoff. But
I remember Laura Lerner bought me that blue dress for that dance I had at school.
We had some very key
She's
people that
Laura Lerner.
That came in with no judgment, that knew. I'll never forget, and I'll never get over this in my life. I was on the baseball field with my boys. They were deep in baseball in this season, and I really wanted to keep their lives normal. They were little, and they were innocent, and they were good. And I bumped into a friend of Jerry and I. We both friendly with this boy who's a doll, and he hadn't seen me in a long time. And he's like, hey, where's Jerry? We're on the baseball field. I'm like, you don't know where Jerry is? And he's like, no, where's Jerry? And I'm like, well, there was this fire, and they blamed him. And he's like, you can stop right there. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you could put a gun to Jerry's head. He wouldn't light anything on fire. He's like, in fact, Andrew, you'd probably be the one to light something on fire. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. He's like,
if you know him.
Yes,
you know.
He said, I don't need you to tell me anything. I know Jerry didn't do that, and I'm so sorry. What can I do to help you? And I was so relieved. I felt like 3,000 pounds came off my shoulders that somebody said it before I could even say it, because I was selling it. I felt like I was selling people on daddy and judging my children. I didn't want my kids to be faulted or, you know, in public chastised. I went to everybody's school and I'm like, this is what happened. This is where we are. I need you to know my kids are okay, but I need you to put extra eyes on them. I want them looked at and I want them cared for. And so many people were so great. I'm not going to say they weren't, but there were some people that were just hurtful, whether they knew it or not. But being in their situation.
What was hurtful?
Things people
give us the tea, Andrea.
Just, well, if he didn't do it, why is he there?
Those comments.
Yeah.
I got those.
You know,
comments
he was arrested.
Too.
I'm like, he was never arrested. You know, obviously there was a fire. He had financial issues. I'm like, unrelated. You don't know Jerry Rubin. Jerry Rubin could live in his car. He's not about money.
He could
live
care
in a about
tent.
Money. He could.
He could live outside.
But you don't know people.
Screw the tent, girls.
You know what's
right.
amazing?
We don't need the tent.
We don't need the tent.
If
just
somebody
a tree.
Says Jerry lit the and fire, then everybody goes with that path. And that's the problem. And then I'm the idiot running around going, he didn't do it.
Right.
And they're all like, uh-huh, we know, Andrea. Well, and they said, it's okay if he did. I'm like, If he did, I'd be angry.
Right.
If he did, right. we wouldn't be together.
Right. I would have divorced him.
Exactly.
What was like a hard day for you that you remember in it all?
I didn't feel like there was a hard day. I mean, every good day that my kids had and my hair was good.
I know a day.
What was it?
It was the day that we visited for the first time in Jesse.
I hated that day.
Oh,
that
I will give you, day. I will tell you that I had a pneumonia and I couldn't go to visit him. And I was really, really, really sick and I couldn't get better. And I was scared for my health because now I'm alone. And now my kids, I was really, really worn down. And I was scared that I couldn't get through it. And I was on that bus by myself with pneumonia. And Daddy sent me away because we were going to get like 30 inches of snow and he wanted me to get home before he saw the weather somewhere. And he said, when I got there, he's like, A, you shouldn't be here, and B, I need you to go because there's going to be a bad storm and I'm going to make them let me call you when you get home. I think something I really need to say is one of the biggest players in this was Daddy.
Right.
I knew he was okay. So I was okay.
He made you know he was okay.
And he was okay.
Right.
He was reading and he was in his right mind and he was solid.
He was helping people. All right. Well, so hold on a second. Dad's not a normal human. We all know this. He's a superhuman. He's totally fucked in his ability to rise above things. You're definitely, you've got a dose of that. You're not a normal human. Your answers right now, I don't know how relatable they are. As much as I agree with them and I live them too, I don't know if somebody listening could apply it to their life other than the only thing I could take away if I have to pull myself out of the conversation is just fucking rise above. I need you to give me advice for the person who's needing mental resilience. How did you rise above? Why were you fine?
Well, I'm gonna circle back to being grateful for what I
gratitude
did have. Mm. And I'm not kidding. I got food stamps. I marched down there because I knew my kids needed to eat. And I took away, like, I'm not that person. I went down there and stripped myself of all pride and got them what they needed. And I got on MassHealth, which was so foreign to me. And I did the things I could do to help myself make it easier. And I took what I needed to take from people that offered. And I kind of got up every day knowing that this would end. Mm. I knew it would end. I knew there was light at the end of the tunnel for me. That's enormous. And I was like, well, I don't have to make dinner. And you don't get breaks in your life. You don't get breaks in your marriage. Usually you're in it. And I took some time to kind of self-reflect. And he self-reflected. And we kind of had new slates and something to look forward to. And my kids were okay.
It's the That was the most perfect answer you could give, truthfully, because if you can lean into gratitude, no matter what the fuck you're going through, gratitude can get you through.
I swear it does. Without knowing it. It's not like I'm running around going, I'm so grateful. I just was grateful.
No, it's not a bullshit gratitude.
Sometimes you have to just relinquish the control. Like, I think that also helps you. It's like if you surrender to the world and you're like, okay, like I'm about, even for my wedding day when we were just talking, like I surrendered to whatever was going to happen, and whatever was going to happen for me was going to happen, and I was still going to enjoy no matter what. For you, you knew it was going to happen. The light at the end of the tunnel was there for you, so you could see, but you relinquished your control and surrendered to the world of, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I need to do to survive.
This is my current reality, and I'm going to make it
And you're lucky. Some people don't get the opportunity for that to end.
I feel bad.
Some people, you know what I mean? Like some people don't, we look at it where it's like some people are worser off than worse off than the cards that we were just given. And you're looking at it where these cards are bad, but someone has it worse.
But I was,
and I'm still grateful.
Taking people off ledges. I had a lot of people to deal with. I had my mother. I had Jerry's mother. His father had just passed away. There was so many things.
I was going rogue in Long Island.
Rach was, I was trying to keep Rachel in college, which I knew I couldn't. And I had to succumb to that.
I was pretty much begging on the streets.
Rachel was living in like basements with no money and no food. Her friends really carried her. And I did what I could. Mike came in handy Carly, you stepped up to the plate somehow. I let you just be and give you the rope you needed, but you didn't take advantage of anything. I had really solid children that weren't creating bigger problems for me. And that's sort of like you wake up, you get your kids to school, you figure out your day. I had dogs. I had a home I had to keep.
You had no choice but to keep going with a smile on your face.
I don't know people, you know, if it isn't terminal, I'm going to tell you again, find the light.
So that's, you didn't cry in corners?
No.
Who was the most helpful to you during that time? Like who?
If you Debbie.
Debbie nice. Shaloff?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Debbie.
Debbie was, she had her own shit and I had mine. She was non-judgmental and Debbie would go to the store and buy something and buy me something.
I know why Debbie was the most helpful because, and Debbie's is one of her best friends. And basically I think she was the kind of friend who didn't ask what you need. She gave you 100% what she needed.
And I was always there for Debbie and she had an opportunity to step up and she stepped up beyond belief for me. I will also say Mike Phipps was really helpful because
I remember him during that time too.
He was somebody that I could call and be like, Mike, my sink's leaking. Mike, my shelf fell down. Mike, my this. And he would come.
I love him.
Would also take the boys and he would think about the boys because they were really important to me. And I'm sure there were people that watched Jake that I can't remember who was caring for him that stepped up a little bit more. And just the community of people around me. I will say one thing that I'll never forget, and I truly believe this. I'm a giver and a doer for people, and I prefer not to be the person needy.
Me too.
I prefer to be the person that's giving. I don't like to need. I don't like people need, being, I don't like to be needy. I don't like it. I don't want to be the needy person. But when you have given and given and given, it came back full force to me in so many ways that I was overwhelmed by how much people gave back to me.
It was beautiful.
And I was very grateful for that. And I took it.
You should.
I took it. Yeah. Hemingway School gave me like gift cards to Stop and Shop and I ran there.
I remember Temples would drop off like gifts for
Hanukkah
us.
Presents.
Hanukkah presents
it,
for us.
We were out of our minds. Makeup. And I took it for my kids. They needed it. I was no martyr and you shouldn't be one. I feel like if you can deal with the cards you're dealt, and you do it gracefully and you do it gratefully and you really mean it, truly mean it, you will be okay. Mm. And I was okay. Well, I never wasn't
right there.
I never wasn't okay and I'm still okay. And by the way, I would never change what happened.
Did it affect your marriage at all?
No.
Were you angry at all?
No. Well, angry at what? I was angry at the system, but I know what Dad's capable of and that's not it. I never worried. Someone once said, Jerry Rubin doesn't start fires, he puts them out.
That's
the truest statement I ever did here.
Extremely true.
Mic drop.
Yeah, end of story. And I knew what I believed, and I knew the truth, and maybe that's the other part of it for me. There was no anger. My mother-in-law used to say to me all the time, you're going to have therapy. You have to work on that. You two are not going to be okay. I'm like, we're going to be fine.
Right.
And we were fine. And I swear to God, he came home. We were fine. And he went to work the next day on his bicycle. And he was fine. And
Michael,
we were fine.
Michael, never forget that.
And then
that.
He wanted dinner. And I was like, Jesus, I hope I enjoyed a year off of making dinners. Because there was a lot of mac
dinner.
And cheese. He wanted dinner. And he's like, what's for dinner? I'm like, oh, see, I was grateful for 1 year of no dinner.
I'll never forget you creeping your toe. I would sleep with you every night.
I loved
in your
it.
Bed.
Oh, my mom's
I did
toe.
Love sleeping with you.
We slept every night.
Every night we
my
slept
my little
together.
Toe. I mean, Rachel coming home was something I didn't know I needed. And it just was like an adult.
Dad knew you needed it.
An adult in my house, sort of. Jake help a body. Jake, yeah. Sometimes I just need a body to go to CVS. I can't leave the house. I can't go to baseball. Baseball was 7:45 at night. I have Jake. It's like Michael was, I don't know, 7, 8? I mean, he was a baby.
He was probably 7, yeah.
So I needed the bodies.
No, yeah, warm I mean, bodies. I never thought I'd come home. And I obviously, Dad had to ask of that of me. And I don't know if I would have arrived at that on my own. But looking back now, obviously the dots connect and it was probably the best move of my life and career.
I did have the best house parties.
Yes, you did. And I didn't care. I wanted you near me. And I honestly believed in just, we had kids over all the time, and my kids went places, but they were happy at home. We were okay.
We were okay.
We were okay, and we are okay. And I don't look back at it at all and think, wow, I don't even think about it at all.
Well, okay, let's talk about five children.
Okay.
LOL, everybody always asks you.
All with the same dad?
How many fathers? How many five dads? Kids?
How many dads? I'm like, one dad. That's enough.
Singular
we
dad.
We all have our own dad.
I mean, truthfully, I never thought I would have five kids. It wasn't something I set out and thought, okay, I want five kids. I was happy with two little girls, but I knew I wanted one more. And then we finally got pregnant. Not, we weren't trying. Just daddy wasn't ready. And then we had a baby. And I knew I was having a boy. I knew nothing that there was a problem. But I was so grateful to have another baby. And it was a boy. And it was going to be amazing. Just a little different kind of amazing, but that's why I have so many kids, though.
Tell us about that.
When I had Jake, I said to daddy, I can do this, but I'm going to need some chaos around it, so I'm going to need more.
Tell us about Jake.
Well, yeah,
our viewers don't know about
Jake. Okay. As far as that third pregnancy,
okay,
you were pregnant with Jake.
So I had a third pregnancy, and I had a lot of weird belly button issues, and I wasn't gaining a lot of weight, and I kept going to the doctor, and he's like, oh, you're fine. You're fine, you're fine, you're fine, you're fine. I had ultrasounds. Everything was normal. Up until back then, because Jake's 26, you only have ultrasounds up to 28 weeks, and they don't do any more after that.
That's like, wild.
I know.
It's like flying blind.
So you have a 28-week fetal survey, which was fine. That they said it was fine. And maybe the technology wasn't as good. I don't know. But then we had Jake. I went into labor, and we had Jake, and he came out. I delivered him naturally, my only one, and everybody was kind of tilting their head. And people were saying, oh, his foot's funny. And it was kind of turned funny. And they showed me him. And I'm like, oh, he looks kind of funny. And I was like, all right, whatever.
God, he was cute, though.
Really cute. Beautiful baby.
But I distinctly remember him looking like he had Motrin in his eyes.
He had, okay, so he had a negative IgRam infection from meconium. So he had to have this.
I don't remember.
He had a negative eye, and he had
I
to have this.
Remember, you were wearing overalls.
Severe antibiotic.
We went to that breakfast place that we can never remember the name of with Dad.
I wish we could remember.
I know.
The name.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
I've looked
the Indian anybody restaurant knows. Now, but yeah, now it's like a Route 9. Convenience store.
No, now it's a dumpling house. Faux dumpling. But it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it doesn't.
But anyways, Carly was wearing overalls, and Jake had Motrin in his eyes.
So the Motrin, it wasn't Motrin. It was like an antibiotic cream. The problem with it was Memorial Day weekend, and it was like residents at the hospital. And everybody kept coming in. And the thing with Jake is that when he was born, I bumped into my pediatrician in the hall. They had taken him away. They don't normally take your baby away. But I went to look. I got up. I'm like, oh, I want to look at him. I had never not had a C-section. And I just threw on my pants, and I was like, where's this baby? And I went to the NICU, I went to the regular nursery, and he wasn't there. And they're like, try the NICU. And I'm like, what's a NICU? They're like, oh, it's special nursery intense care. Try in there. And I went in there, and I'm like, do you have Jake Rubin? She's like, oh, I have him. And she was an old-time nurse from Metro West who was just unbelievable. She had been there for like 40 years, and she was squeezing his cheeks while he was drinking. I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, he's... Why is he here? She said, he's dusky when he eats. I'm like, what is dusky? She's like, oh, he turns blue and he's like having trouble swallowing. And I'm like, oh. She's like, it's normal. It's like suck, swallow, breathe. That's what they do. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I didn't think anything of it. And I went.
But did he look funny to you?
He's very peaceful. And he was beautiful, baby.
He was beautiful.
He didn't look familiar to me. Yeah. It was just, he just didn't look familiar. And
he didn't look abnormal, though.
No, he was a beautiful small. Baby. He was 4 pounds.
Right.
And his mouth line, his gums were funny to me. Just, he had a funny thing. I bumped into the pediatrician on the way back to the room. I was like, all right, I'll be back. And I went to get daddy. And when I saw Karen Rednor, she was like, oh, what are you doing here? I said, oh, I had a baby. She said, all right, I got one more, and I'm going to look at him. I'm like, oh, he has a funny foot. Look at his foot. She's like, I will. And when I went down there, she had had him, and she had him in her hand, one hand. And she was turning him over with one hand. I'm like, and now I've had you guys at the PD. You guys were like 4 and 6 now. You were probably 4 and 6. Does that make sense? And so I've been with the strep throat, the diarrhea. Like, I knew everything you ever had. I go to the PD. I'm like, this is what they have. And you always had it. And so when she was looking at him, I'm like, you're looking at him weird. She's like, yeah, I'm not comfortable telling you he's normal. Ooh, and that was the line. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? She's like, he's got a lot of anomalies. I'm like, what's an anomaly? She's like, he's got a lot of disfigurative things. I'm like, I don't know what that means. She's like, his head size is very small. He's not measuring up to par on his head. That could just be genetic. It could be nothing. But he has a simial crease, and he's got a dimple and hole in his spine, and he's got low ears. And I'm like, bye. You're fired. And I went and got daddy. Yeah, I literally was like, bye, Karen. You're fired. And I'm like, I'm done. And I literally ran back to the room, literally. Daddy was sleeping because he was exhausted from labor and delivery. You know, that is for the man.
So difficult.
And I'm like, could you get up? Something's wrong with our baby. I put the covers over my head. I'm like, you deal with it. And so he's like, okay. And I'm like, oh, God. And so I went back with him. And they were like, we're going to call in genetics. And I'm like, okay. So I call my mother. It was like 6 in the morning because I had a baby at 1:30 in the morning. So it was like, you guys were going to come. You guys were so cute. You came with us to labor and delivery, but we had to get you picked up. I don't remember who grabbed you.
You went into labor and we had to
you all came. You were really cute. You came with me. And then somebody grabbed you guys. And I mean, you guys were so excited. You were just little girls having a baby brother. And I didn't want you to be upset by whatever. So we were just trying to make it like, yeah, we had a baby. Just hold.
We did have a baby.
We did have a baby. And I'm like, please hold. So my mother's like, your father has a small head. It's genetic. Ask him. And I'm like, oh, all right. And so it went on from there with the MRIs and the blood tests and questions and a million questions about my pregnancy and yada, yada, yada. It just went on and on and on and on and in and out of MRIs. And then they came back and they're like, he's agenesis of the corpus callosum.
What?
Exactly. And I'm like, is that good or bad? I don't even know what you just said. She said, that's not good. It's when the stem doesn't talk to both sides of your brain. I'm like, okay. She's like, but we're going to do the MRI again. And they came back and they're like, great news. It's connected. I'm like, cool. What am I in for? So they had neurology come and they had all these people come and then they sat us down. And they were like, don't close the book on Jacob, but he's probably going to be institutionalized. He'll never be normal. He'll be severely, they called it retarded back then. And they just said,
why do they not call it retarded?
I think it's politically incorrect. It's sort of like a word that is turned into.
But isn't that what he is?
Well, he's very developmentally
retarded.
Well, he's developmentally delayed. It's just a nicer word.
I think they stopped using that word.
Yeah, I think it was offensive. It's just not good. I mean, I'm like, a lot of people say, well, you had a handicapped child. You don't deliver have a handicapped
that's
child.
The part for me. I'm like, you didn't deliver handicapped.
So you deliver a baby and it has anomalies. An anomaly is things that aren't normal. So he had too many, like a line in his palm, which can indicate Down syndrome in this case and indicated like a genetic something. And he had this little hole in his spine and he had like just a pinhole. But they were like, it could be spinal bifida, but then he didn't.
Well, the thing is that truthfully, they don't know.
They don't know because it's all testing. Yeah. Murray Feingold's office finally came in, and that's Genetics Birth Defect Center, which you never want when you have a baby. You never want to meet them. And they were kind, but they were, you know, more factual about kind of the chemistry of it all. And the thing is, Jake wasn't missing a chromosome. There was no blood test that showed anything. There's still today no diagnosis. He is just...
Well, he's microcephalic.
Microcephalic is a symptom. It means small head.
And has cerebral palsy.
Small brain. So your brain... Well, your cerebral palsy can be a limp all the way to full-blown handicap, right? So cerebral palsy is a jerking kind of emotion. It's, you know, muscles that don't work. Yes, he had that.
He didn't develop correctly.
He was cortically blind. His head was small.
He is cortically blind.
Well, I'm saying when he was born, he was cortically blind, which means you can see, but you don't process what you see. So it's funny. Everybody's like, what's your wish? What's your wish? And I'm like, well, my wish would be that he walks. That seemed the easiest solution. Like, okay. Right. So
I hope he walks.
Cute little, you know, special needs little child. And okay. So there were so many overwhelming statements that were being thrown out. And he was too small to go home because they said he could seizure. He did not fit in the car seat, so we couldn't legally bring him home. And we had diagnoses that really weren't clear yet. We just knew something was very wrong and his brain never developed. And people are like, but he could grow. I'm like, I don't know. And the neurologist said, preemie babies, he was sort of a preemie, can be normal. They can be normal because you're neurologically normal. But Jake wasn't neurologically normal. And I understood that he wasn't going to be typical. And they wanted to G-tube him, which is giving him food through, like, you know, do a little surgery and give him food through, like, this backpack thing. And I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm not giving my kid vanilla canned milk in his
side. Little well, it's interesting pouch. Because that decision right there, I don't know how the hell you got the balls to say no to doctors, right? But Jake, one of Jake's greatest joys is applesauce and cream of wheat.
Eating.
It's one of the only joys he really has. You know, outside of like music and whatnot. So you said
no. I didn't know that yet.
That's what I'm saying, that it's incredible you said no.
It seemed very medical to me. I didn't like it. I was like engaging in food and that relationship. So for the first.
But he didn't present like he actually needed it. So
he was very, very quiet.
Yeah, but that was a bad decision to just say, oh, he needs a G-tube.
Well, most kids.
My point is when a doctor is saying something to you and you're in an experienced situation, you would think you would go with what the doctor was saying because you don't know anything better.
Yeah, and I'm not disregarding. I appreciate your intuition.
Her intuition
because you fought for your child, and you were right.
She advocated for him, but yet it ended up being a joy of his life forever. So
you were right.
It's still the only real, you know, joy that he has that we were able to give him and connect on. Usually you connect, you know, you're a mom. You connect on feeding your baby.
Yeah.
That's sort of like the whole beginning. You're connecting on burping and puking and feeding and loving and sleeping and full and just that joy of knowing they're satisfied. And they were like, you know, there's a G-tube. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing a G-tube. So I went home with a Tylenol dropper and they became my best friend. And I took this little baby syringe and I literally went to the corner of his cheek and I dropped it in. We had to have, and they told me he was failure to thrive and that I couldn't keep going. I'm like, I'm going to keep going. My pediatrician was excellent. She was an alarmist.
Karen.
And she said, he's growing. And I'm talking, he was born at 4:12. He went home at 4:06. And at 1, Jake might have been 7 pounds. But Jesus. We just kept, she's that like, he's on scary. His own scale. And
I appreciate that though.
You could put your hands around his waist. Jenny Jones was a big part of my life at that time. And you couldn't believe, like you could literally hold him and your hands could join. He was so tiny, but he wasn't pathetic. And he was really beautiful.
7 pounds.
He had to be woken up.
Sadie at 894.
Mm-hmm. He was tiny. And I had to have a nurse come every Friday with a scale. Mammy Hunka. And I would sit there. Yeah. Big girl. And they'd weigh him and be like shaking their heads like, you know, he's just failure to thrive here. I'm like, good, mark it down. Bye-bye.
Yeah, See you next week. I love that. I almost want more of that in my life for my skill sets of the way that you do that. You just disregard.
I take everything with a grain of salt. And I think it's important to when you have kids, typical kids, special needs kids, you're the mom, you've got to know. I did not look at him. If I felt like he was failure to thrive and he wasn't crying and waking and moving and yeah, he was in the same clothes for a year, but I knew that he was inching.
Good for you, honey. Saving some money on those clothes.
100%. And he had nice clothes, but I was just like, no, I'm good. So we just dropped and I wrote it all down every single, I'm not disciplined. That's not my nature. That's not who I am. I'm not organized. For me to do that was really important for me. And he grew. I mean, look, Jake's 26 years old. He's 60 pounds. He's not a big child.
And he's an earth angel.
He's an angel.
And I love him.
But it was one of those things where you need to use your own instincts.
I have been asked this question before. I find it to be a disturbing question, yet I know it's something people wonder. If you knew that he was going to be disabled or special needs, would you have proceeded with the pregnancy?
I think that if anybody could honestly give you that answer, I'd like to meet them, because I don't believe there's an answer for that. That if I was given the opportunity to change anything in my life, it would not be Jake. Mm. I don't know if somebody said to me, and the impact of what somebody could say to me was, okay, this baby is not going to walk, talk, sit, crawl, going to be 100% needy of you for the rest of your life, and will have no independent qualities whatsoever, and he will, you know, need full-time care, and he is not going to thrive, and he is not going to give you any kind of a lifestyle, would I be able to give you that answer? I think it's a stupid question for anybody that has a special needs child. You love your child.
It's an alarming question. When you're I was a mother, that, I was shook. But
I understand the question, and I can tell you right now, I couldn't tell you what the answer would be. Without having a child and being in a pregnant situation, I don't know what my answer would be. It's like having a gun to your head, like I said before.
I get that.
It's like saying, what would you do if you had a gun to your head? Well, I know karate.
I think your answer, I don't know.
You don't know the answer.
There may not be an answer.
Hindsight is not helpful.
It's not my life, but it is my brother. And like, my life wouldn't be the same without him. So like, I don't have to deal with it in the way that you have to.
That's what I was going to say.
But I mean,
don't want him to ever not be a part of my life. So I hope in your soul, your answer would be no.
But I don't have an answer for that question, because I never needed to face that question. Yeah. And so I would be a lie to tell you that I would say, no, I would definitely do that. I don't know. It sounds horrific.
But then I'm like, if he could have had a better life, I don't know. I agree with you.
I think you can't answer that question.
But then I saw it firsthand, and I'm like, oh my God, it's not a fun life for him, and it sucks for you sometimes too. And the medical things that do happen to are scary, because no one knows what to do with him. And I've been in the rooms when those things happen, and people are like, he doesn't have normal lungs, and he doesn't have a normal opening, and he doesn't have... can't cough, and he doesn't know how to get rid of his saliva and those type of things. And he could aspirate, those type of things. I'm good with those are really scary. And I can't even imagine what goes through your brain when those things happen.
Nothing, because
I
was going to say, Rachel always says, mom, is this the end? I'm like, no. And you know what? I got to be honest with you. I do not wholeheartedly worry about one thing until I'm faced with it. And if it's terminal, probably don't call me.
Yeah.
But if it's not,
terminal,
I'm good.
Don't fucking call me.
Don't call me. Don't call anyone.
We're definitely not soul busy.
We've been very, very close.
You'll have to scoop me off that floor.
We've been very close. And I will be honestly tell you, Rachel and I were fight or flight. We were on our knees. Mm-hmm. We had to get smelling salt. We had to be taken care of. But you know what? We rally.
Well, no one knows what we're talking. So Jake is not medical.
At all.
He is not a medical special needs child.
Until?
Meaning he's not tubed, meaning he doesn't take medications. He's just a child. Well,
he's a forever baby.
He's a forever baby. So one thing to take note of is that our parents still have adult diapers. You know, like you still bathe Jake, change Jake, feed Jake, need babysitters
he's
for Jake.
He's basically a 26-year-old
baby.
Three-year-old.
Two-year-old.
Three-month-old.
He needs full-time care, and he's home with you. You've never, institutionalized, whatever that word is that you used before.
Well, like a daycare or
He's with you.
He goes to a program every day.
He's with you. Now, when Jake gets hit with a pneumonia, he does not know how to cough, right? His brain doesn't allow him to do that. So he can't get the phlegm up, so it settles in his system, so he aspirates. He has had two episodes that have been extremely
scary,
alarming.
He's been in intensive care. Intubated.
Mm-hmm. And what my mom was referencing is there was one night where Jake turned blue, became hypothermic, went to the hospital. We were with him, and somehow the situation flopped very quickly, and we almost passed out.
The doctor told us he had 6 months to live.
Yeah.
Well, this became a more of an emergent situation than what you're talking about. And then he went into full-blown white-out lungs, And we tried to bypass him and CPAP him and do everything, but we had to intubate. And they told us if we intubated,
he wouldn't.
We probably
back.
Could extubate. And he did.
He and, intubated and extubated. Yeah. And everything they said wasn't true. And it's interesting. I have the utmost respect for doctors, especially Boston doctors. They saved him. But a lot of the times with Jake, in many scenarios,
specifically with Jake,
they've been incorrect. Well, like, for example, yeah. his hips.
Yeah.
Let's talk about his hips, you know, like in that scenario.
Well, he had 11-hour osteotomy surgery that led him to not be able to walk because he overhealed, because neurologically his brain doesn't know when to shut off healing. So he calcifies in his hips, and then he's locked as a pretzel. And the only way to unlock him would be more surgery, which is really vascular, and it would only benefit me. And so I was like, because they felt I could manage him better because he wasn't going to be locked. And I'm like, no.
We're How not old doing was he that. When he had that surgery?
Yeah. Well, that surgery ruined him. It was like probably 10.
So he was 10 years old, and he was, I remember he could sit he could stand.
There.
Yeah. And then Mass General Children's?
He was at Franciscan's, and his hip x-ray came back saying both hips were out of the socket, and they needed to be, like, you could clearly see the bones. So we had to do the osteotomy.
So you had no choice.
No, we didn't. And he was really sick from it, and he had a really hard time. But he did come through it. He just changed a lot.
So his hips froze, and then he became almost like a board.
He's stiff as a board.
Well, the difficult part about Jake being a board is he needs to be carried, right? Yeah. So, like, he gives no assist when it comes to carrying him. So his hips are fused shut, and his legs are fused as a pretzel. So to care for him, even to change his diaper,
you have to lift both legs up and under. But you can do it.
It's challenging.
You're a beast.
You do it. You're a fucking monster when you change that kid's diaper.
Well, I mean, you don't have a. You just do it. I mean, let me tell you. I want to be honest about one thing that I don't want anybody to think. Oh, like, I think this is so fun and it's great and I'd do it again and all those great things. It sucks and it's not fun.
It does
and Jake's
suck.
Never going to have kids and he's never going to get married and he's never going to give me anything other than love.
Perspective and love.
But I'll take it. The one nice thing about Jake is he lives in our life. Mm. And we've always made that kind of the way we live with Jake. Is
you
that
guys do that though?
He just lives with our life.
You make him normal. Like, I remember my friends growing up, especially Julie Marin, I don't think could have laughed harder at Jake being in the kitchen. And we're like, Jake, shut the fuck up.
And he'd be
stop
laughing
screaming. Stop clucking. Like, just shut up.
But we were just kidding. We call him the baby, me and Jerry. We just are like, get the baby. I mean, we just laugh. But the thing is, Jerry's made it very manageable. He was the one that said, let's bring him home. And I'm like, hold on a hot second. I'm going to need a hot second. But Jerry's been true and true as Jake's dad.
Strength.
Always.
Well, your life partner is so important. Like,
so
literally
he
important.
Was just on board. He was more on board than I was to
and
begin
like
with.
And like us and our husbands, honestly.
You're realizing that now that you're married too, that it's not just about the wedding and like the photos. It's about the partner.
Who is your partner in the times of difficulty? I couldn't have fell more in love with Joe than on our wedding day, though.
But who like, steps up
the way he
for you?
Is. And I fell in yeah. love with Joe this past week, actually.
I already was in love.
I was in love with him. I fell deeper in love with him. The way that he helped me in selflessness and was there for you.
Picking the right
was
partner,
beautiful.
Though, does get you where I am.
Yeah,
100%. I don't know that I could be this strong or this grateful. And believe me, I say grateful. Our lives have been up and down and up and down, but the one stable factor in my life is Daddy.
Yeah.
No matter what. Rock. I mean, there are days I want to chop him up in little pieces and just, mm-hmm. you know, throw him in
of
an
course.
Ocean.
That doesn't, of course,
that's
doesn't
just
mean
marriage,
it doesn't happen.
But he shows up always. Mm. Always. Never is he not there. Even when he was incarcerated, he was there for me on the phone or telling me not to come. Or walking me through a scenario with you guys, or figuring out how I could get money
a
for
man
something
of
I
character.
Needed.
He truly
a
did.
A man of
and
character.
Honestly, he always made it a point to make each one of us feel special, whether it was writing you a specific letter or me.
You guys
a specific
are
letter.
Special.
Like, he missed my high school graduation. I didn't even know, didn't even care. Like, none of those things.
Because you
mattered.
Realize monumental things are fun and they're great to celebrate.
You stay at college, you didn't even care. You came right home.
It's getting like, through the tough things
yeah,
that are going to get you through life.
I mean, mental resilience.
It's just a thing.
It doesn't mean that there won't be hard times. It's just how do you combat the contrast of it all with.
And how bad
what
is
do you
it?
Meet it with?
I mean, some people say to me, oh my God, I don't know where to put Billy. French immersion or...
Billy.
Just a random... Nobody. You know, French immersion or English, you know, kindergarten. I'm like, I don't even know if my kid's going to live till tomorrow.
Right.
Like, who cares? You learn
perspective and gratitude.
Care about things that do they matter. Is your kid the best baseball player?
There is a very important topic that I want to bring up, and it is the subject of people saying the phrase, as long as they're healthy. It's something you've talked about before with other mothers who have special needs children. I think it's meant to be, I don't think it's meant to be offensive, but I've heard many people say, oh, what are you having, a boy or a girl? I don't care as long as they're healthy. I never knew that that could be an offensive statement, but from something you had said once before, it hits home for some people who have special needs children. And I wanted you to touch on that a little bit about why and what that feels like when someone says that.
Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of truth in health for everybody.
Right.
You, me, our babies, babies that aren't here. Obviously, that's the most important thing in life. And I think it's disappointing when people are upset that they're having a boy when they wanted a girl or wanted a girl and had a boy or whatever. Because the truth is, you're going to think I'm making this up, but when I had Jake, I was so grateful after having all five of my kids that the other four were all okay. I looked at it more like, these four are a miracle, because everybody says as long as they're healthy, but I don't know if they really mean it, because they don't understand what it really means to say that, because everybody says it nonchalantly. Jake had 10 fingers and 10 toes. Don't kid yourself. He had eyes, nose, a mouth, a head, feet, legs, everything.
But you had something to compare it to. Like, you see, I think that's a new phenomenon too on TikTok, where like the infertility world is like coming to a head for some people. And they're posting a lot on TikTok about how, like, as long as they're healthy, because a lot of people can't get pregnant right now. And they're talking about how, like, they don't care what it is as long as they're healthy. So that's definitely a new phenomenon people are saying, though, and people can relate to at this point.
Well, I don't think it's a phenomenon when it comes to as long as it's healthy. Most people...
I think when people first started getting pregnant, they were like, boy, girl, what is it? I'm so excited. They never thought about the complications that could go wrong.
What should people say? Like, I feel the same way, right? Like, I want more babies and I want them to be healthy. And no, I don't want a fucking baby until he's 27 in diapers. I don't choose that. But like,
you also were just pregnant and wanted girls. You know, like,
it's not that you, I don't know if I knew what I wanted.
It's not that you can't, don't say that you can't want. I wanted girls.
Yeah.
And I wanted boys.
I want girls.
I didn't.
I want the girls.
But you really don't care. Jake wasn't even a gender for me.
What should you want?
He was just a permanent baby. I think you should want a healthy child.
So as long as they're healthy, right? So what?
A child, I mean... Nobody doesn't want a healthy child, boy, girl, doesn't matter. Everybody wants a quote unquote typical child. But there's a lot of children that bring so much joy to people and perspective and peace and love
100%.
And lessons and unconditional love. Jake's kind of a journey on his own. I will promise you this, having five kids and having one special needs child, completely different set of rules. Jake is a different set of rules as a parent. When he's sick, it's alarming. When Michael had pericarditis, you could have just shot me and taken me out. I was immobile. Now, it's so funny. I deal with Jake all the time. And when Michael was sick, my typical child that like had really serious complications, I was so upset and freaked out. Jake comes with sort of this different set of rules. So once you get past the diagnosis and all the things people tell you and all the children's hospital neurologists that tell you all these horrible things and they don't happen, you're like...
You had to learn, Jake.
You just start from scratch on he's on his own scale and his own agenda. And if you accept that and appreciate that and just let him be who he's going to be, like I did with you guys... He's evolved into who Jake Rubin is supposed to be. Well, I mean, healthy is, I guess, very broad because Jake is healthy.
Right.
It's just, you know, he's very special needs and he's very needy. I don't think anybody ever says as long as he's not needy,
right?
I mean, think about
as long as he doesn't need me too much. As long as he doesn't
need me. I mean, I think all children are needy. Jake's needs are very different and very intense, as all special needs kids are, because special needs to some moms is just ADD, and it's a lot for them, and that's that.
I want to ask you some viewer questions.
Oh, boy.
So one of them was, I found this to be a compliment, this question. What is your advice for raising ambitious children? Do you do anything deliberately?
Nothing was deliberate, although when you can't give your kids everything, it makes them want, and then they have to figure out how to get there. Sometimes I couldn't give you everything, but I could give you some of it, and you had to figure out the other half. I think my best parenting skill is rope. I give you guys a lot of rope, ton of rope. You tell me the truth, and I see that your rope is you know, going too far, and you're looking like you need to be reeled in. I will reel you in, but I gave you a lot of freedom and a lot of opportunity to go figure it out.
Yep, I agree.
I love that. I was going to say I love that about you. I never felt like I had to lie. And when I did lie, I'd always get caught. So it didn't really matter.
Anyways. I knew exactly what you were doing.
I was too afraid to lie.
But I expected you to do the things you were doing. I just wanted you to be smart. Just don't get into cars.
I don't think I did anything naughty.
You did plenty of naughty.
Like what?
Just things.
What was naughty?
Like New Year's Eve up on Carter Drive.
That was naughty.
Yep.
New Year's Eve.
I was under a pool table. Plenty of things you did. Got in a car. I mean, things
that. I was definitely naughty. Awful. Than Rachel.
I mean, very naughty. But I knew what you were doing. But the thing is, you have to learn on your own. If you think you're controlling your kids, you're out of your mind. You don't control them.
Montessori
book. And the more you hold on and the tighter you are and the more rules you have, they're going to burst out of your arms. They're going to go to college and they're going to lose it. My kids went to college and they had already drank. They had already smoked. They had already done things. They were like, it wasn't fascinating.
Right.
I didn't want it to be such a big deal. You had friends that weren't allowed to do a lot. And they had rope that was so tight it was around their neck. And the truth with that is, when they had the opportunity to let loose, they were worse than everybody else. Right.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And I really try to apply that in my parenting, even now, like with babies and
they
toddlers.
They have to learn. They have to be free. You have to know.
Freedom.
Yeah. I mean, did I let you cross the street without holding my hand? No.
You weren't an idiot.
No, but I absolutely, if you said to me, I mean, I threw Carly on a plane at 12 years old and sent her to Mexico for $75. I got an American airline person to hold her hand and throw her on the plane.
Go to Guadalajara, Carly.
She went to Guadalajara. And
their chocolate milk is bomb.
But she went alone.
I remember.
On that plane and went to a foreign country that didn't speak English. And Carly just killed
it. I had the best time.
Adios, bitch.
Would you want any do-overs as a mom?
I think I would have introduced you guys to less sugar.
Okay. I'll take that.
Just because I know I'm such
queen.
Because I'm such regimented a sugar girl. You were very regimented. But we weren't privied to the kind of food choices you guys are privy to today. Like, we bribed you and that's the way it went, and our food sources weren't as good as yours, but I would have definitely managed sugar better. I
appreciate that,
Mom. Yeah, I know you do, and I'm sorry.
Thank you very much.
These are some more viewer questions. What would you say is the best part of being a mom?
Just the unconditional love and the joy of watching your kids grow. And the sibling part for me is a huge deal. My kids are so close, and it has nothing to do with I'm not like, call your sister, call your brother. They just love each other, and I love watching that. They have each other's backs, and they are truly friends.
I love my siblings.
Yeah, I really love I love the perspective kids give you and the hope that they give you for carving out a new life and making more of themselves than even you could. And I think my favorite part of my kids for me was giving them a life that I truly didn't get as a child, and I was able to give them peace at home. I wanted you to have peace. I never had peace, and I felt like you guys got to let it out at home, and your home was a pretty safe place most of the time.
Very safe. Yeah. Very safe. No, I mean, you had generational trauma and you healed it and didn't let it infuse into us.
I don't think of it as much. I mean, trauma is kind of what I guess. What I know you get that
the word something. Has a negative connotation, and I'm not saying.
I mean, could I go dark and deep in therapy and maybe like dig and think, oh my God? But and when I count back to things I've been through in my life, I'm like, really? It doesn't feel like that to me because I feel so fortunate that I feel like that shit has to come to be fortunate. How would you know you're fortunate if you don't have shitty times?
Yeah,
we don't know.
Andrea Rubin, the philosophical queen of 2024. I'm not even
philosophical.
You are. You don't realize it, but you are.
Born with this resilience and empathy for others and the ability to pivot. Mm. For me, is
she's the queen of the pivot. Who calls you that?
I can pivot.
No, I Carly, I'm making fun of
what's Carly something you want someone going through a hard time to remember.
Look for the light. The light at the end of the tunnel. That's what you need. If there's light, you're good.
There's a light.
I'm telling you, the light so is everything. Bright. The light at the end of the tunnel.
Let it be your guide.
She thinks she can sing, folks.
I really hate it.
She really can
admit,
sometimes.
Admit it. What?
That was a good one.
You're an idiot.
I do honestly. Think light, though, is.
Look at this.
Let her be.
Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think and my collection
and to end?
Stop, she's not Carly. Kidding. I was enjoying it.
She What's really your means best it. Advice to stay soul busy and carve time for self care?
I think live your life and enjoy the chaos and deal with everyday adventures and then go get a petty mani.
I knew that was
and
coming.
And a 90-minute massage and eat the Cadbury bar and book the vacation and live your life. When I go, I want to go in debt, people, and I'm planning on it. I'm going to die in debt.
Rock out. Rock on. No, you fucking live to the fullest. You Absolutely. Are that bitch. You pony. You know what you are? You're the girl that's out in the blizzard.
Yeah.
You're the girl I love the that's blizzard. Having the donut. You're the girl that's smiling in the corner. You're giggling. You're down for whatever. You're
I
down
love
for
a snowstorm. I don't get why people get so mad. I'm like, why do you live here? I love a snowstorm. I love a rainstorm. I love a hurricane.
I love the cold. I
love
wear
a
coats.
Sunny day. I don't wear coats. I love the Cape. I love Florida. I
no,
love
you
the car.
Are, Mom, I love you TJ's. Are fucking living. And you know
pony
what?
Up, girls.
You pony up. You pony up, you fucking bounce around town. You're the most down-ass bitch I ever did meet.
Bitch got no filter.
You are a walking glimmer. You're the definition of you see beauty and light and love in all people, in things. You see the positive in all moments. It is an aspirational state of being that our viewers really should, you know, pay attention to.
I appreciate that.
It's amazing.
Well, we love and appreciate you, Andy.
I'm glad you were born 2/22. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
An aligned bitch.
I'm lucky to be aligned because it's not something that anybody gave me. So I could be so out of line. And believe me, I'm not perfect and I'm not always.
Definitely not.
I take on what I want to take on too. I think as you get older, I'm 61 today. There are things I learned not to take on. And that's another thing you need to learn. With 60 came a whole new set of rules. I'm like, yeah, that's not happening.
You also don't socialize a lot.
Well, unfortunately,
I'm not overly social because I would prefer to be with my family. I love my friends and they're good and we have fun and we go out and I try to make sure I see my friends. But I'm selective. Mm-hmm. I'm very selective. And
she's selective with her time.
I'd rather be with my husband and home in the corner of the couch waiting for someone to call with some form of an emergency. It never fails.
Jesus.
And Mocha Chip from Brigham's.
Love Mocha Chip.
Well, this was, I thought, an incredible episode.
Well, thank I love you, for you both being vulnerable. And I'm so proud of you.
We love you.
Rock out.
Rock on.
Rock on.